This is the Blaze Radio On Demand.
Every day on this show, we talk about the uncertain state of the world. Things are getting dangerous. Things are getting troubling. And when it comes to feeding your family in an emergency, you really don't want to stockpile the wrong food. You don't want to risk that your food will spoil and go bad when you need it most. That's why I like the Patriot Pantry brand of survival food. These meals are delicious, they are nutritious, and they are rated for 25 years of storage. I'd like to invite you to try some today for yourself for free. That's right, you can get four free servings of survival food good for 25 years when you go to freefoodone.com right now. All you have to do is cover the postage. That's freefoodone.com. This is a special offer just for my listeners, available only while supplies last. So I'm asking you, please, log on to freefoodone.com right now. Tell them where to send your free survival food. Again, that's freefoodone.com. Go check them out. Get your free survival food.
Now, spreading freedom across the nation, this is 3, 2, 1.
The Buck Sexton Show.
Team Buck, happy Monday. Thank you so much for joining me here in the Freedom Hut. Good as always to have you along for the ride. Bit of breaking news as we come on air. There has been a shootout at the front gate of the National Security Agency headquarters in Fort Meade. It looks like two individuals are killed. And latest reports I see here are that two men were dressed as women and they tried to ram the gate of the NSA headquarters at Fort Meade, and they were, I believe, killed in that incident. So there's more coming out about this, and we'll keep you updated with anything else as it breaks. You know, I spent some time over the weekend looking over sort of some of the more broad policy journals and think pieces and trying to get a sense of what the temperature is, what the general assessment is of not just the Iran deal, but the whole Mideast mess right now. I can tell you there are a lot of people, those who, generally speaking, have some way of explaining everything, whether it's Tom Friedman being like, well, the Middle East is sort of like a box of French fries, and some fries are salty and some fries are short, and everyone goes, oh, Tom Friedman. Or are there other people who have a slightly better take on things? Walter Russell Mead, or you can look at the latest from Max Boot, and there are others that I think have a better vision of what's going on there. But I'm sensing that no one is really able to make sense of what's going on now from the administration's perspective, meaning that it's all in on Iran. It's all about trying to get this nuclear deal, and then everything else is supposed to be sort of copacetic and mellow, right? It'll settle down. You get the nuclear deal, which is supposed to be agreed to, at least in principle, tomorrow. That's the deadline for it. Now, there's some last-minute back and forth that's happening. Will they allow for the export of uranium, or will they allow for the inspections on the timeline? How fast do the UN sanctions have to be removed for Iran to go along with the deal? All of these things are still, it seems, up in the air and up for debate. And yet you'd think that given the stakes, this sort of stuff would have already been very much settled. But you see, the nuclear deal is only one part of all of this. The nuclear deal is only one aspect of a much larger scene. Iran is the Shia state, as we have discussed before. It is the only major Shia-majority Muslim country in the region. You have some... You have the Iraqi state being Shia majority, but of course, that has always been under the boot heel, so to speak, of the Sunni Arabs. So while even though they're a majority population-wise, they haven't, in terms of the power, been a Shia majority state until now. Or a Shia-governed state, I should say, until now. The Iranians, the Iraqis, many others now are seeing that there's a moment of true sectarian warfare that is playing out before our very eyes. And it's happening in Syria. It's happening in Yemen. It has already happened and continues to happen in fits and starts in Lebanon. And it's going to continue in other countries in the region as well. Tehran is in control of four Arab capitals. And if you add Tehran into the mix, five regional Mideast capitals. They are pushing further and deeper into Iraq than anyone estimated they would at this point in time. And I mean with military force, not with just influence. We're not talking about soft power. We're talking about power. Actual military power. And it's only going to get worse. And when you look at this deal, you have Netanyahu, for example, saying that it's more dangerous than he even feared. You have a rabbi in the Jerusalem Post, or as the Jerusalem Post has reported, a rabbi comparing Obama to Haman, who's enemy, biblical, ancient enemy of the Jews. And yet the idea here is that if the deal goes through, everything else gets better. The Obama administration's gone all in on this one notion. If this doesn't work, well, then they will clearly have, even by their own measure, a failed foreign policy. But I think it's already too far gone for it to be retrieved. No one single issue, just as they thought before that a Mideast peace process for Palestinian and Israeli issues would solve all this stuff. They thought that would happen. They couldn't even get that process to square one. They couldn't even open the negotiations, just as they thought that was happening. Now they've realized that, well, maybe if we can get a deal with Iran, it will quiet everything down. But that's not how this works. There are too many moving pieces. You see, in Syria, we don't like Assad, but we like ISIS less and the other groups that you don't even hear about anymore, Jabhat al-Nusra and many others. We like them even less. So we want Assad gone, but we say that he doesn't have to go and we'll fight his enemies for him. But it's not because we're allied with him. That's where we are in Syria. And you look in Iraq, we want a pluralistic, multi-confessional democracy. But because ISIS has decided to take over about a third of that country, we will act as Iran's de facto air force in trying to push back ISIS. But we're not allied with Iran. We're just helping Iran because the enemy of my enemy, as you've heard so many times, it's now become such a cliche that people hesitate to even say it. That's not even true in the Middle East. The enemy of my enemy is not my friend. It's just another enemy. And then you look at Yemen, where you have the Houthi rebels backed by the Shia, Iran, and you have Arab states forming a coalition now to fight against those Houthi rebels at the behest of the Hadi government. And we're hoping that the Arab states, because we're closer with them, obviously, are able to be successful in this process, because we were also supporting the Hadi government. So we are against Iranian interests very clearly in Yemen. We are for Iranian interests in Iraq. And we're for Iranian interests in Syria, despite our best efforts to explain it otherwise. So what is the policy as we go through all of this? What are they actually trying to accomplish? Now, some will start to feel a natural inclination to retract from all of this. Say, well, is it really going to harm us much? And the problem with the Obama administration's view of the Middle East is that they've always thought, well, if we just did less, we would have less risk in the game. And we can just watch things play out. Here's a problem with that, though. They keep on wanting certain outcomes, but they won't put in the effort to get them. They want to direct events in the Middle East without actually having a hand in those events in any meaningful way. It doesn't work. If they were actually non-interventionist across the board in the Middle East, I'd say, well, at least that's a policy. That's not their policy. Minimalist airstrikes, minimalist support to the Syrian rebels that we think are the least problematic of the sects and groups in Syria. Just enough support to the Yemeni government that they can take the fight to al-Qaeda, but not enough, obviously, that they could prevent an overthrow by the Houthi Shia rebels. So we're not, by no means, as this administration has completely withdrawn from the Middle East. No, they've just done the minimum, done the bare minimum necessary to make it seem like they're engaged, to make it seem like they have some idea beyond Let's just take a look at the news cycle today and make a decision as it goes along. But to give you a sense of how dangerous and deadly this whole situation is, you'll recall that on March 20th, there was a major suicide bombing at a Houthi mosque in Yemen. This is al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula attacking the Houthi rebels at a mosque while they were at prayer. We actually have some video of it. And you'll see this brings together all of the different strands we're talking about here. Because sure, there are some factions that are worse than others. But understand that at the moment of this video, you have these Houthis who are at prayer, yelling death to America and death to the Jews, right before, these are Shia Houthis, yelling this right before a Sunni Arab terrorist from al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula comes into the mosque and detonates a suicide vest. We have audio, we have video. Here's what it sounded like. Now, the atrocity of a suicide bombing inside of a mosque is just considered intramural warfare within the Islamic faith. You'll notice there are not protests all over the world. There aren't people who are as outraged about this as they are when, say, there's a false allegation of a Quran burning by someone who's non-Muslim or some other perceived affront to the Prophet Muhammad or whatever the case may be. No, there's a Sunni-Shia civil war playing out across the Middle East. But that one clip, first of all, of course, there's the horror of it and the understanding of how vicious they are willing to be to their co-religionists. Because remember, anything that is schismatic, anything that leaves, according to the Salafists, according to the hardline Sunni believers, anything that deviates makes one an infidel. This is the practice of takfir, saying that you're outside the faith. So Shia are, of course, based upon that version of Islamic jurisprudence, outside the faith. They can be killed. In fact, according to real Sunni hardliners, they should be killed because they have turned their back on the true faith with innovation. That's what they call it. And so here we see a moment where you have one sect, a sect of Shia backed by Iran, yelling death to America and death to the Jews. Inside the mosque, of course. Think of prayers and holy moments and reflection. No, chanting death to America, death to Jews. That's, I suppose, what you can expect these days in mosques in many countries. But then you have suicide bombers, also Muslims, coming in and blowing them up. So we'd have to ask the question, which side do we want to win? Who do we really want to win? Can we even pick sides? We're forced with the sort of pseudo-wisdom of Henry Kissinger during the Iran-Iraq War, when he is at least reported to have said he wished that they could both lose. We're picking sides between two groups, between various groups, between sects, between tribes, that don't actually in any way want to be our friends, that believe in things that are completely in opposition to our most closely held tenets and beliefs, and wish to make war on us the moment they have the power to do so. But the Obama administration doesn't recognize any of this. They take a more UN-centric view of things. You know, the United Nations recently, the United Nations Human Rights Council, said that Israel was the biggest violator of women's rights and the biggest violator of human rights. Bigger than North Korea, bigger than China, bigger than Iran. That's the so-called international community's consensus on the real problem in the Middle East. They think Israel's the real problem in the Middle East. The Obama administration doesn't seem far behind them. Won't say it out loud, but based on the policies as you see them, what other conclusion can you come to? We are now in a situation where we have very little leverage, and we are picking between sides that hate us and want to kill us. We have no good options. Back in a minute.
888-900-3393.
You're on the Buck Sexton Show.
Only on the Blaze Radio Network.
Get your Team Buck t-shirt at theblaze.com.
Team Buck, I don't know if you saw this, but Indiana passed a law that openly allows discrimination against gays. Totally false. Totally false. But that's the way it's being reported. So I just felt like, why not read the headlines you're seeing in the mainstream media so we'll know what topic we're on, right? That's what they're saying. They're saying that this is a law that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act state-level companion bill to the federal RFRA that passed in Indiana last week, and was signed, rather, by Governor Mike Pence last week, that this is an open invitation to discriminate against gays, primarily. That's the issue that they're focusing in on here. Now, there's, of course, some backstory. The RFRA came after a Supreme Court decision that said that an individual could not take peyote for religious observance because peyote is a hallucinogen that's illegal under the Controlled Substances Act, which, by the way, is a terrible law that should be revisited and dramatically altered. But nonetheless, it was considered good law at the time to say that if a law is universally applicable, religious exemption does not apply if it meets strict scrutiny, right? Then the RFRA comes in and says it has to meet strict scrutiny. It has to be a compelling state interest. There has to be no other way to achieve the same interest. And if it comes into conflict with legitimate religious belief or closely held religious convictions is the term of art, which gets a little bit more malleable depending on who you're talking to. But Indiana passed this, and what's, of course, fascinating is that there are many other states, including Connecticut. There are 20 states, in fact, that have an RFRA state-level, companion bill at the state level. Remember, there's the federal RFRA, and now states have passed their own version of it that says that when it comes to state law. But here's where it starts to get a little bit trickier, and here's why there's been so much anger, so much gnashing of teeth from activists, and why the media is reporting on this as though it's the Go Discriminate Against Gays Act. That's how it's being reported. It's not true. What this says is not only can you raise as a defense under RFRA in Indiana your religious belief as a shield against state action, you can raise as a defense sincere religious belief against private action, meaning, this is what it all comes down to, if a gay couple comes into your store and says, I want you to make me a wedding cake for my gay wedding or my wedding, and you don't do it, this bill would allow you to go to court and raise as a defense your religious beliefs against a suit under civil rights discrimination. That's all it does. So it gives you the right to say in court, or at least it gives you the option to raise as a defense, right? There are some things that you can't use as a defense, for example. There are many different instances where you can't go out there. They have a strict liability standard, right? So you can't say, well, you know, I thought that I was allowed to take this drug, and so I'll raise that as a defense. You know, I thought I was allowed to take peyote. That's not a defense. Right. You can say that in court, but that won't actually, you're going to jail. Right. This means, this law in Indiana means that you can say, well, I am a devout evangelical. I'm a devout Jew. I'm a devout Christian, whatever the case may be. And you can say, I do not wish to partake in, for example, a gay wedding or some other thing. And then the court gets to decide, or the, when there's a civil case, I guess the judge gets to decide. But nonetheless, depends. That's how it all works. That's all they're saying, is that you can raise this as a defense. There's this very unsettling reality now of groups that have suffered real discrimination historically and still in the present, that the moment there's a changing of the guard and political powers in their hands, they don't want tolerance. They want celebration enforced via the state. They want to eliminate someone's right to have a difference of belief under their faith. This is going to reach a point, my friends, and make no mistake about it, and this is the end state goal, where they want to force any church, any temple, any religious organization to perform gay marriages under threat of law, of penalty. And all Indiana's doing is saying, at least you can raise a defense if that happens to you. Back in a minute.
You're listening to Buck Sexton, only on the Blaze Radio Network. Sexton.
Team Buck, the broad voice lines are open, 888-900-3393. As always, great to hear from any of you. If you can sneak away from your TPS reports, or if you're outdoors, if you can get a good enough signal, if you're at home, whatever you've got going on, throw us on the speaker, and please do call in, 888-900-3393. I've always really liked the Mencken quote about a demagogue, which is one who preaches doctrines he knows to be untrue to men he knows to be idiots. You see this time and time again in the media in this country and with politicians in this country. And unfortunately, with this Indiana law, what I think you're very much seeing is that this is the whipping up of the mob and the usage of fear to prevent a discussion of what's really happening. I want people to be able to decide for themselves what they think about this Indiana Religious Freedom Restoration Act. I am someone who, as a classical liberal, this is also why, you know, and perhaps this is just my own little thing and I should give up, because I know a lot of people hear liberal and they know that we're talking about the left. But I just can't bring myself to do it. And maybe one day I'll just give up on that one, because everyone else seems to be throwing it around liberally. You see what I did there? But the truth of the matter is that I want people to be able to see both sides of the argument as it actually is, to know what's really happening in Indiana before they comment on it. But that's not what the activists and the leftists want. They offer you a choice, and it's sort of like the choice that used to be offered, metaphorically speaking, by the cartels in Colombia, Medellin and otherwise. What is it? Plata y plomo, you know, silver or lead, i.e. you can take our money or bad things are going to happen to you. What the activists want is for you to either join the cool guys and gals, join the cool table at lunch, and immediately start denouncing Pence and everybody else in Indiana as some kind of anti-gay hate mongers, and, you know, how can they do this, and start changing your Twitter and Facebook profiles to gay rights and gay equality symbols and all that stuff. You can do that, and people that are in your day-to-day lives who are already on that side of things, and depending where you are in the country, that can be basically everyone, like me here in New York City, or if you're somewhere else, it might be perhaps a little more split. But they'll think you're a hero, too. They'll join you in the moral preening. You get to go, yeah, they're a bunch of hate mongers. They're just a bunch of hate mongers. I just hate them so much for being hate mongers. Meanwhile, as I said, there are 20 states that have a very similar bill intended to do the same thing. And it does take you down this path of, okay, well, so does a rabbi have to perform a wedding for a Satanist cult? Does he have to do that? Somebody, tell me why not. A Satanist can very, very much believe in whatever it is. Can a Catholic priest be forced to perform a Wiccan wedding, if such a thing exists? And I don't know. I'm sure it does. Whenever I bring up Wiccans, I actually get emails from Wiccans who are reasonably polite, actually, so at least there's that. But can they do that? Why not? Someone tell me why not. The Church of Satan has followers, it has believers, it has people, it has rituals. Just like climate change nut jobs, they have rituals and beliefs and faith traditions that aren't rooted in anything other than taking it on faith. But you just get the sense that it's so hard. It's so hard to fight against the mob because that's the way they want to break this down. They want to make this such a binary issue. It's not about whether an individual can actually believe something and can live their lives with that belief without it being infringed upon by the state, because that's actually what's happening here. They want the state to be the arbiter of this dispute. And they really want to make people feel bad, and they want people to be ostracized. They want their businesses to be shut down. The activists I'm talking about now, there are some, and I've read them, there are some very brave members of the gay community who say, guys, this is not, and gals, I know, microaggression, saying, guys, I better put some money in the microaggression jar.
What's wrong with you, bro?
I don't know. I just say guys sometimes when I mean that for both sexes. It's just ridiculous. But there are some within the gay community who are speaking out and saying that we're not supposed to be a bunch of little totalitarians now. We have more acceptance in society than at any time in the history of this country. More people of goodwill on our side than at any time in this country's history. But figuring out what that actually means and how that actually allows people to respect their religious traditions, is a part of the debate that needs to be had. That needs to continue. Right? There's no one would advocate for violence or for sanction against homosexuals at this point in time. If they did, they would be shouted down, and rightfully so. But at what point does one's right to be accepted infringe upon someone else's right to be free? That's really the heart of the whole debate and the discussion. At what point does one have to come out and say, well, I'm not sure that I want to celebrate what you're doing, but I'm not going to, I don't want to be a part of it necessarily, but I don't want to, I'm not going to say the state should stop you from doing it. But this all comes from a very central progressive notion. And in this case, the gay rights movement is really being seized upon by progressives in a lot of ways. And you'll notice this. And this reminds me, for example, of the transgender issue as well, where you'll have people who will literally be sending death threats to conservative. I've spoken to some of them about this. Conservative friends of mine who are pundits who are out there, all names you would know, but I don't want to say because I spoke with them about this in confidence. But they receive death threats for talking about gender equality issues. And what's amazing, of course, is that they can often find out, or they often are told by the person issuing the threat or the threat of violence or just the hateful language, they're not transgendered, but they're issuing threats and using all sorts of foul language and spewing hateful rhetoric on behalf of transgendered people. Because, yeah, they're the vanguard, man. They're at the tip of the spear. They're in the fight. You have a similar issue playing out now with progressives and the movement for gay marriage in this country. And remember, this is beyond even gay marriage. This is gay marriage that has to be, that everyone has to buy into and agree to. And if you don't, you're a bigot with the state sanctioning you, shutting down your business, telling you what you can and cannot do. This is now a government that wants to tell you what you can like, wants to tell you what you can believe. This is a government that increasingly has no limits to what it will involve itself in. And we find ourselves constantly struggling against the mob mentality. Who wants to take the time to actually read about this law when you can just hashtag I stand with gay rights or whatever? I'm sure there's a hashtag now about how bigoted Indiana is. What you've got, Apple, one of the biggest, most powerful companies in the world, that CEO, Tim Cook, coming out and saying, oh, you know, this is terrible and we're not going to do business there and we don't want to be involved there. And you've got others as well who are coming out and saying that they won't allow state funds to be used for a state government to travel to Indiana. And they want to ostracize and punish Indiana because they think they can get away with it, you see. Connecticut has a Religious Freedom Restoration Act state law as well, but that's Connecticut. You know, a lot of it's a Democrat stronghold, a lot of rich Democrats. Let's not throw stinky cheese in their general direction. But this is what's happening now. Indiana is red. Easy to pick on Indiana. Indiana is not some big, powerful, wealthy state. Indiana is a part of that weird mutant society known as the Heartland in progressive circles. You know, Indiana's in flyover country. Indiana, this is what they think. Very obviously so, because other states, like I said, Connecticut among them, have this law, and yet you don't hear boycotts of Connecticut. You don't hear people saying that's going to happen. And think about how extreme the response is when all this means is that you can go before a court and say, I wish this gay couple all the best, but I have religious convictions that conflict with what they're doing, and I don't want to be a part of it. You see, there's a difference from telling you that you can't interfere, from telling you that you have to accept what others are doing in their own private sphere and space, and saying that you have to bend the knee and applaud. And increasingly, the activist movements of the progressive left, whether it's on transgender issues or gay rights issues or anything, they don't just want to change the law. They want to use the law as a tool to silence any dissent, any debate, any opposition, any hesitation. And it has that unseemly and anxious feeling of a creeping totalitarianism. An ideological totalitarianism, but one that also does mobilize the state for very specific purposes. And you can also see that there are those in the progressive left who are not gay, who are not transgendered, but they see this as an opening to essentially replace religion with the state, and the state then becomes the religion. If you think that's crazy, think about the debates we were having 10 years ago versus where we are now. It's not crazy at all.
Buck Sexton will be right back.
The Blaze Radio Network.
What team are you on? Get your Team Buck shirt now at theblaze.com.
Team Buck, I want to tell you about a plague in our society that seems to be growing more and more with every passing day. It is a lack of self-awareness, particularly in public places and when it comes to public display, you know, what you're doing for others to see. I was down in D.C. over the weekend, that's why I was off on Friday, taking a weekend for myself, and I have to say, I was shocked at how many people I came across in either the train on the way down or at restaurants when I was down there who seemed to think that it is okay to watch a movie on their iPhone or on their computer or with the volume on. Now, you're in a confined space. We have something called headphones, but people will just turn this on. And particularly, and I'm not trying to be all microaggressive towards people who have very difficult children, because I'm sure that can be a nightmare, but particularly people with obviously ill-behaved young children who seem to think that it's okay to give them, you know, Frozen on their iPhone, and we all have to sit there and hear the soundtrack of Frozen. Obviously, I'm not singing it well, but you know what I mean. I get this stuff all stuck in my head. I have to sit here. I'm trying to have a meal with other adults, and we have adults who have children who are of speaking age. They can take commands and they can take criticism, but they won't tell them to not do this. And I just, to this day, I feel this way about movies too. I want to give everyone a warning and then have the job, if I get to walk around with, like, you remember the super soaker water guns, and just give people a little squirt of some cold water, perhaps, or something like that, to just let them know this is not okay. But that's a lack of self-awareness that I've seen growing over time. I'm annoyed enough when people's headphones are so loud that I can hear the dialogue on their movie, or I can hear the music they're listening to on the train, as I have to basically live on the subway here in New York City to get around. and you hear the really loud, you know, if it's that loud that I can hear what song it is, it's too loud in your headphones. But if you can afford a $500 iPhone, you can afford $10 headphones for your kids. Sorry, I'm not sorry. But then there's even grosser issues where people show a lack of self-awareness, more egregious versions of it. And, you know, there was this explosion, and some of you very kindly reached out to make sure I was fine. I was, in fact, on my way to D.C. There was this explosion in the East Village, a neighborhood I know very well here in New York. It brought down a building, essentially, ripped off the whole facade, and there was a building collapse. Two bodies have been recovered. There was a gas leak and an explosion. You know, gas leaks are incredibly dangerous and can literally blow up a building, as they did in this case. And this part of the East Village is a very dynamic and popular destination for people to go out to dinner and to sort of socialize and hang out. And what we saw were people going past this explosion site, taking selfies in front of the explosion. You know, big smile, thumbs up. Hey, look at the big explosion behind me. And I think that we need to work as a society, maybe. I don't know what the way to fix this is. But that somebody would think that it's appropriate. Not just one person. Groups of people were going past. You know, hey, look at the explosion behind me. They pulled two bodies out of there. People were injured. People lost their homes. People lost their businesses. Two people are dead. You're taking selfies? And there's some on social media who are collecting these postings of people who take selfies in front of burnt out cars after a wreck, or a selfie and, you know, in front of somebody who's having an operation, or a selfie at a funeral. Or we've become not just a self-indulgent society, but a society so lacking in self-awareness. And this is particularly my own. I'm a graybeard millennial, but the millennial generation and below, we're the ones that really need to get a handle on this. Not everything is an issue, is an opportunity for personal branding. Not everything is time to be like, oh my gosh, like people on my Instagram will just love this. Like, let's just take this photo of this car that burned out after two people died when they went through the windshield. Like, that's not okay. And the East Village, a place that's very near and dear to my heart, is not a time to go over there and take photos when there are people who have died in the wreckage. Self-awareness is a good thing to have. Let's bring it back.
The Buck Sexton Show on the Blaze Radio Network. Spreading freedom across the nation. This is
the Buck Sexton Show.
All right, Team Buck, thanks for staying with me through to hour two. And if you're joining now, thank you so much for that as well. The broad voice lines are indeed open, 888-900-3393. Got space for some calls. Would love to hear from you. We can talk Middle East. We can talk gay marriage. We can talk selfie sticks in front of natural disasters and human suffering, and how that is not an acceptable state of affairs for people, and anything else that comes up. I'm seeing there's a theme that is emerging on social media, with some of you writing hashtag Team Buck and then something along the lines of Buck is Statler and Waldorf. And you know what? I'm just going to own that. I'm just going to lean into that. Just going to take it. You know, who are these people on the subways with their listening to their loud music and the beats and yeah, if I can hear the music and it's too loud. First of all, I also feel bad for people because apparently they didn't get the memo that this does destroy your hearing. I know people who have had some degree of hearing loss from going to really loud concerts. I can tell you, I've been to some very loud concerts, and I have, yes, I'll admit this to you, Team Buck. I will come clean. I have put earplugs in, which seems ridiculous, but actually the music is so loud that with earplugs in, you're just not completely blowing out your eardrums, and you can enjoy it more. I don't know when all of a sudden there was a decision made that you'll have a better time at a concert if it's so loud that you, one, cannot even you can't even speak into someone's ear directly, right? It's so loud. And that your ears should ring and you should have basically tinnitus for a few hours afterwards. I mean, this is insanity, right? This is just, who would ever think this? I even remember going a long, long time ago with my family to, I think it was Bryan Adams, "Everything I Do," that guy. I remember going to a concert of his, and that was too loud for me. I have sensitive ears. What can I tell you? I'm a sensitive soul. But that people would put these earbuds in and just blast and blast and blast. They are destroying their hearing. You will not find a doctor that disagrees that extreme and particularly close-up noise put up against the eardrum like that, you're destroying your hearing. And I want to tell them, like, what are you doing? But no, they just want to listen to Let It Go, Let It Go. That's the one that I was trying to think of, by the way. I was having fits last night as I was going to sleep. It was so stuck in my head. I was on a train, and there was a young what do we call it, a tot or a toddler or whatever. It was like 4 years old, maybe five, I don't know. I can't tell these things. Watching that on an iPad, and it was so loud. And watching just over and over again the song from Frozen, which I guess I'm going to have to, I don't know. I mean, do I need to watch this just as a cultural marker so I can understand what's going on? So anyway, there is that. Also, I saw the movie The Imitation Game finally, which I liked but didn't love. Thought it was a little sort of self-indulgent, and at points even a little sort of a little meandering and a little whiny. Did not totally love it. It was good, better than some of the other, definitely better than Birdman, better than some of the other stuff that sort of made its way into the upper echelons of the celebrated movies of 2014. But nonetheless, it wasn't really my absolute favorite. Interestingly enough, of course, it does deal with very vicious and very real gay persecution, or persecution of gays, and that's part of the storyline. I just also think they could have done a better job explaining a bit about how the sort of cryptology worked. They kind of just built this machine, and it might as well have been a Willy Wonka machine that made like magic chocolate bars, because they didn't really explain anything. That would be one criticism that I would have. They didn't sort of take you through any of it, but I suppose they had other issues to tackle. All right, so I was talking to you about the mob before. And I don't mean the mob like, hey, you do the thing about the thing. You take the guy over there with the, you know, you talk to Tony about Sal. You get the order about this. You're going to do that? You know, not that mob, right?
Going to make you an offer you can't refuse.
Not that mob. The mob in the generic sense, right? The broad spectrum mob. The mob that much of the media in demagogic, I guess, could I go either way on that one? With demagoguery, speaks to on a regular basis, right? And you can always sort of tell where the media is on these issues, because it sort of filters down, right? You have the hardcore with MSNBC, hardcore left, you know, just going to take the most, they're going to get as close to statism, communism, and sort of the progressive purity as they can. But even on sort of the morning shows and the what's supposedly the lighter fare, they all take this position, right? And this is the case. You can even see this it's true on this issue of the so-called, well, not so-called, it's the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, but they're calling it a bill to persecute or to discriminate against, really. It's discrimination, not persecution, because persecution is only going to happen if the state is involving itself in this process. The guy who runs a cake store can discriminate, but I don't think he can really persecute at this point. Nonetheless, they are taking the position that this is what filters through to people. You know, next we're going to talk about, you know, summer salads and what to do. But first, let's have an anchor pretend to be a serious human being and talk to somebody about this new bill. And, you know, why do you want to discriminate against gay people? And why would you do this? And this filters into the culture. This is how it works. From the very largest shows and the sort of shows that are supposed to be the most mainstream. And you just see the knee-jerk. All you have to know is what's the knee-jerk reaction of the anchors. You see this as well with climate change, which is not something I'm going to be forgetting anytime soon. How just completely insane people are on this issue. You know, they think, oh, well, is man-made climate change happening? You say, well, man-made activity probably has something to do with it, but that's a very minor component of very minor climate change. That's what all the evidence actually points to. That I know they want to pretend that there's all this other stuff, but that's actually what the evidence shows. You know, they think that they say, you're not a scientist. Well, I can read a graph. And I can add and subtract, and I understand numbers. Oh, but you haven't seen the models. Okay, show us the models and the data. Explain the models to us. Oh, no, we're scientists. Really? You're scientists, huh? If you want to have some fun, go read the IPCC report and tell me what you think it's actually saying. Tell me what it actually is trying to tell all of us. This is the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, you know, UN thing. The same UN that just decided that Israel is the greatest violator of human rights in the world, or at least the UN Human Rights Commission decided that. That same UN is trying to dictate public policy with, you have to read this thing to believe it. And the next time I go on TV and get to talk about this, I'm just going to hold this thing up and say, have any of you read this? It's gibberish. It makes no sense. Actually, I'm reading comprehension, something I do excel at. And I can sit there and explain reading comprehension and reasoning, basic reasoning, logic games, also something I have some affinity and ability for. And tell me why I'm wrong. But see, the mob dictates, oh, what do you mean you don't buy into climate change? And the mob on this issue is, what do you mean you should be able to discriminate against gay people? It's not what the law says. It's not what it will do. And it also completely takes out of context that there are other states across the country that have this that apparently no one seems to really very much care about. And you have the leading lights, the leading luminaries of the Democratic Party, all of whom have expressed not just skepticism for this current movement in the past, the movement of what they now call marriage equality, but were openly for traditional marriage. The Clintons openly for traditional marriage. Hillary Clinton openly for traditional marriage. Bill Clinton for traditional marriage, signed DOMA, as we know, Barack Obama for traditional marriage. These people are all a bunch of liars, craven liars. But they all get a pass. And it's interesting to wonder, why do they get a pass? Because the progressive machinery is much larger than even just the movement for gay marriage or marriage equality or whichever nomenclature is being used today. It's much broader than that. It's being used as a tool, irrespective of the intent of some, who I think do just believe that this is a movement for full recognition of the rights of homosexuals to marry whom they choose. Irrespective of that question, there are many who are using this as a means of silencing dissent, mobilizing the government for progressive causes as a means of essentially gutting religion and religious freedom, which is very much at the heart of all of this. And also just enlarging the role of the state such that it's inextricable now. This is part of the problem. So the state is so involved in all aspects of our lives that to say that people should just be allowed to be people and to do as they please within the confines of law that is intelligible and based on sound reasoning and moral foundations. No. The government's involved in everything now. Tax policy is involved in everything now. There's some way the Commerce Clause is involved in everything now. There's some way that they can determine for you what is acceptable behavior, what you can do. There's no restraint anymore. There's no restraint because government doesn't really allow private life. Government reaches into every aspect of our lives. And so that's already been established. And now it's a question of who gets to sit at the controls, who's at the steering wheel of this monstrous government leviathan that gets to tell you what you can and can't do all the time. Even your faith tradition is not safe from this. Even your faith, your belief, your religion, your relationship with God, none of that is sacrosanct anymore to the left. And they are finding ways to undermine and, in fact, to overtake it. Sure, you can be a Christian, but you're going to have to play ball the way we want you to. You can be an evangelical, but you're going to have to violate tenets of your faith on a regular basis because the government says so. And the founders would be outraged at all of this, but this is where it's all heading. I want to tell you a story, by the way, about the mob and how it functions and what sorts of decisions mob mentality bring about. We'll take it overseas, and then we'll bring it back home with what we can extrapolate from all this. But I would love to hear from you. Broad Voice is 888-900-3393. Back in just a minute.
Taking intelligence to a whole new level. Buck Sexton.
The Blaze Radio Network.
This is the Buck Sexton Show.
All right, let's take a call here. We have Will on the line. Will, you're on the Buck Sexton Show.
Hey, Buck, can you hear me all right?
Yes, sir.
Excellent. Hey, a couple of thoughts. You were talking about Islamofascism and the two sides of Islam and who we want to win. Uncle Ted, or also known as Ted Nugent, had a wonderful Facebook rant the other day. Basically, he said, whenever you have militant Muslims living near anybody, they don't want themselves or anybody else being happy, including other Muslims. And he had like 14,000 different examples of like all of the bombings and terrorist activities from militant Muslims, even on militant Muslims and the rest of the Western world as well. It's funny because he even goes into atheism, Buddhism, Hindus, Christians. He goes, whenever these people live with each other, yes, they disagree, but they don't kill each other and they don't dominate or like harm one another. It was just very interesting, and I thought you'd get a kick out of it if you wanted to look it up. But you were talking about gay marriage, and I wanted to have a very interesting discussion, I guess, with you. I've been working over a decade with youth and young adults in a religious setting. I've been a youth pastor and a young adult pastor, and now I work for a denomination. I can't say which one. And I've worked for a couple different denominations over that time, and I've just come to the realization that you can't legislate morality. I've kind of left the Republican Party and the Democrats far behind. I'm kind of an independent. I'm right now currently registered libertarian because I've realized the more you try to legislate morality, the more it just pushes totalitarianism and backlash. You're actually not changing hearts.
Will, can I just – I want to interject for 1 second, Will, and I don't want to cut you off. So just hold what you got next. I know people use this term, you can't legislate morality, but in fact, really, morality is the only thing you should be legislating, meaning that a good law must be a moral law. So I mean, I think what you're talking about is sort of choice, you know, the choices that people can make that don't necessarily it gets a little bit more complicated than just you can't legislate morality, is all I'm trying to say, because morality is, like, you know, of course, we take it back to the Ten Commandments, and we take it even to U.S. criminal code. You know, murder is immoral, hence we legislate that you cannot murder people, right? Even if you murder someone that no one cares about, that no one's going to miss, whatever, and it's in the middle of the woods, and, you know, what difference does it make? No, murder is immoral, and that's why we legislate against it, right? So we do legislate morality, but what you're saying is we don't legislate choices that some view as moral that don't necessarily reach the realm of state intervention, or we need the state to protect people from personal choices.
And that's what I'm saying is, like, I've had youths who grew up in my youth groups who ended up being gay or transgendered or bisexual. I still love them. I disagree with their life choices and where they're going with their lives. We're still friends. They've invited me to their gay weddings, and I've told them, you know, hey, I don't support your gay wedding, but I'll come to the reception because I love you, and because I want to be a good individual toward you, I will support you, but I'm not going to support this celebration. And if you want to have a gay wedding, I'm of the personal belief that, you know what, get government all the way out of marriage 100%. If people want to be going to the courthouse to get a gay marriage certificate, let them. But at the same
time, I want to point out that I would largely agree that the government should be out of the marriage business. The problem, though, because it does become a financial decision. It's legally binding. There are all these aspects to it that involve government intervention. But let's also be clear that even if you did that, churches, wedding halls attached to churches, things like that, the gay rights movement in this country will now use essentially public accommodations law. And that's why they keep saying this is the new civil rights struggle, because they're trying to use the same. But for the same reasons, they would say that you can't refuse to serve black people at a lunch counter. You can't say that you won't make a cake for someone. You won't rent your wedding hall to them, whatever the case may be. So even with the government absent all of this, don't think that that would stop the lawsuits and the cries of discrimination that need legal redress. Those will continue on, but go ahead, Will.
No, you actually were on to my next point. You're kind of stealing my thunder. Whenever I do
Sorry.
Talk to my gay friends and say, hey, I love you. If you want to go have a gay marriage, fine. I disagree with it. Do your thing. But I'm more worried about your heart issue, because from the heart is where the actions and the mindset and the ideals come from. And when you start to talk to individuals who want gay marriage, you say, hey, fine, go to the courthouse, but you can't tell my church that I have to do it. They're like, oh, well, us gays don't want to infiltrate your church. And then I go, oh, wait a minute. What about all the Scandinavian countries that started with gay marriage? And now if you're a pastor of a Christian church in a Scandinavian country, if for any reason you deny a gay couple and they go to the court, you have to do that wedding or you lose your church. What about Western Canada, where if you're a religious nonprofit and someone wants you to do a gay wedding, you have to do it? It didn't start that way. It became that. It's progressivism. It's the state saying state is going to state, and they're pushing it down their throats in the name of special interests. And that's what I'm saying is it's hard, because you can't tell people, I want you to have the freedom to do what you want, but your race is different than your sexual preference is different than my religious preference, and we should all learn to live to tolerate one another. And true tolerance means, even when I disagree with you, I'm going to let you do your thing as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else. For example,
all right.
I don't think
go ahead, Will.
That's where I'm at. So,
okay. All right, Will, thank you very much. Good to hear from you. Appreciate your call. Understand that for the left, tolerance is really a Trojan horse, right? It starts with tolerance, and then it turns into demands, and then it turns into government coercion. They don't want tolerance. Tolerance is you do your thing, I do my thing, and we leave each other alone, right? That was at least how it was originally set up for us to believe, that tolerance was just a question of sort of live and let live, sort of a laissez-faire view of social interactions and social relations in this country. That's not what's wanted by the progressive left. That's not what's wanted by gay rights activists. They want the coercive force of the state, and they're increasingly getting it. We're going to have a Supreme Court ruling, as you know, not long from now, on gay marriage overall. And I think they're going to determine for all 50 states, well, I think they're going to determine that gay marriage is the law of the land. So we'll have to see how that shakes out. Team Buck, light up those lines. I'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to Buck Sexton, only on the Blaze Radio Network. Phone the Sexton Hotline, 888-900-3393.
That's right. Phone that Sexton Hotline, 888-900-3393. We have Matt in Boston on the line. Matt, you are on the Buck Sexton Show. Thank you for calling.
Hi. How's it going? Yeah, I just wanted to chime in about, you know, you were going on about the statism and, you know, our government is controlling everybody. And like your last call, you know, he was, you know, talking about how, you know, we got to do something about this, and he's right. We got to basically stop voting and stop funding the delusional megalomaniacs in D.C. And what
well,
I
if
like
you stop
ask,
voting, the worst won't the worst megalomaniacs have power? I mean, that you really like that idea, Matt? I don't think that's
well,
the way to go here.
I look at it this way. Let me ask everyone that's listening to your show these questions. My first question would be, can you give rights to me and other people rights that you do not have yourself? Yes or no?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought these were rhetorical questions. Are you asking me? I thought we were going to go down a list.
No, I'm asking you, your listeners, everyone, basically everyone that's listening. Can you can you give me rights that you do not have yourself?
No, I think the answer to that is no.
All right, so my next question would be to everyone is, can you and a friend give me and other people rights that the both of you do not have?
Okay, no. So what's your point here? Well, I'm losing
so
a little bit of patience. Go
no,
ahead.
Right?
What? Yeah.
Two answers
yeah, yeah.
Or no,
go ahead.
Right? All right. So since Congress consists of other people, how can they give us rights that they do not have themselves?
I don't like what rights? What are you talking about?
Well, if a law, right, that's considered a right, right? Or a privilege, right?
A law is not a right. What are you're going to have to help me here. I'm not understanding what you're trying to say, and I want to give you your say here. But
an unalienable right and basically a government right.
There are rights that that we have irrespective of government. Okay, right. We're going back to the founding now. But what does this have to do with
rights? Are rights that cannot be taken away by anyone on this planet. So
as a philosophical point, but rights are taken away. Rights are taken away all the time, right? So I mean, this is you keep saying rights cannot be taken away. No, they are taken away. They shouldn't be. But so what is the point you're making about?
So, basically, my point I'm trying to get at is if you're human. And if I'm human and you're human and we can't take away each other's rights, then how can people 2,000 miles away take away billions of other people's rights? They can't. You know that as well as everyone else. It's undeniable.
Thank you, Matt from Boston. Appreciate you calling in. Okay, so I want to talk about what happened. You'll recall that there was a woman who was attacked, set upon by a mob. Speaking about mobs and how they think and how moral or immoral they may be, there was a mob in Kabul, Afghanistan, capital of Afghanistan, that set upon a woman and killed her and set her on fire. And it was because she was accused of burning a Quran. Now, what's come out since then, by the way, is that not only was this woman named Farkunda not guilty of burning a Quran, she actually went into a mosque in order to chastise people for being in that mosque and selling. She said there were illiterate mullahs who were selling good luck charms and visitors who they were convincing that any prayer offered in that shrine would come true. It's at a shrine, sorry, not in a mosque. It was at a shrine. So there are people who are essentially profiting and capitalizing off of a religious shrine. And she was saying that this was superstition. This was un-Islamic behavior. And when she went there and started saying this, someone accused her, some man at this shrine accused her of being an infidel who had burned the Quran. And on that simple accusation, which was a complete fabrication and a lie, a crowd gathered, beat her to death, and set fire to her corpse. Should be pointed out, by the way, this was not in some far-flung province of Afghanistan. This wasn't some village that has no electricity and hasn't had any real interaction with the outside world in some cases, meaningful interaction ever. No, this was in the capital. This was in Kabul. The area of the country that's supposed to be the most, I guess you'd have to call it progressive or the most sort of liberalized. And you have a woman who is set upon, murdered, and then set on fire based upon a simple accusation. This is the mentality of the mob on display. This is how mobs operate. They want instantaneous gratification. Slogans and accusations are more meaningful to them than reason or logic or any of the above. They also, of course, have a general disinclination towards mercy, right? Well, mobs don't want to be merciful. Then what do you got a mob for, right? Well, why gather everybody with the pitchforks and the torches if you're just going to say, okay, well, you know, next time we're really going to show you? No. Mobs want instantaneous, not justice, but gratification. And that's why the mob mentality is displayed in media in this country is to silence, to mock, to shout down, to really disgrace publicly anyone who deviates from the prevailing leftist orthodoxy. See, I never find this is not something that I ever celebrate, even when our side wins, right? When conservatism, when constitutionalism, when classical liberalism is somehow beating the left on a certain issue, right, or an individual, I don't like to see them set upon, humiliated, screamed at. You know, I did not like it when people were when Michael Moore said some very stupid things about the movie American Sniper. I didn't like it when everyone was making constant fat jokes about him because that's irrelevant. I'm not angry or I'm not irritated with Michael Moore over what he said over American Sniper because he's fat. That's irrelevant. But that was an impulse that I saw, and I think it's something that we have to be careful of because the other side does it all the time. And I can tell you this happens with me. I go on TV, I get off, I have people saying that I wear a wig and I'm 12 and, you know, what do I know? And, you know, there's a part of me that wants to go on there and, of course, either go back on and really say what I think because I especially, outside of the Blaze, have to always, I have the constraints of an enforced politeness. Meaning that other people, the left, they get to go, nah, nah, he, 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 and they get to sort of throw feces. And I have to sit there and be respectful because if you're a conservative and you start to give in to the impulse to just go after someone and gut them on TV, outside of conservative friendly outlets, right, you won't be allowed back. You're banned. So that's how they do it. The game is rigged. The game is rigged, and the other side wants blood, so to speak. And in that context, it means blood on the airwaves. And that's why you also get people who I'll go on, I'll be talking about who I think is a good candidate or the problems with Obamacare. And someone will say, you know, I hate your stupid, ugly face and your hair is fake. As you know, the hair is most definitely real. But nonetheless, why would someone say this to me? Or people even say, you know, your tie was crooked. You're an idiot. Okay. Well, you've never had a crooked tie on before? I mean, but this is people, they want instant gratification for their beliefs, and they want victims. They want to punish people. They want blood. And in the case of Afghanistan, the mob mentality is they want blood literally, right then and there. They beat to death and lit a woman on fire because of some random accusation made by some evil individual at a shrine. And now what's come out is that they're saying that she was a true Muslim, a religious hero, according to a lecturer at Kabul University, and she was defending Islam. So now they're saying that she's a martyr. So they want to try to spin this and turn this into, well, you know, wasn't she? She was actually great. And this is the lesson we take from this is that she was a true defender of Islam. No, the lesson we take from this is that mob justice on the streets of Kabul can result in heinous atrocities against entirely innocent people. And that the impulse of the mob is always a dangerous thing, right? When you just go along with what others are saying, with what others are thinking, with the slogans, the imagery. The best book that I could offer to you on this would be Gustave Le Bon. And Gustave Le Bon is a French philosopher and social psychologist, I suppose, is one way you could describe him. And his book from 1895, it's called The Crowd, A Study of the Popular Mind, is must read material to understand progressivism, but also to understand really collectivism and how the impulse to be on the side of the many and to be supported by the group and to feel empowered by those around you who are all demanding immediate gratification of their preconceived notions, demanding immediate gratification because they're so certain they're right. They don't know anything about it, but they're certain they're right. In Kabul, this means you can get beaten to death and lit on fire. In the U.S., it just means for now, you'll be mocked, you'll be ridiculed, maybe fired, maybe passed over for promotion, maybe passed over for opportunities. But it's not a far jump. It's not a huge leap, really, from the one to the other, given enough time, enough pressure, and an unopposed mob mentality. So you should read Gustave Le Bon. You should read The Crowd. It's pretty, it's not very long, and it's very interesting stuff. But I just wanted to talk to you a little bit, as I have here, about what happened with this woman in Kabul, because that's really for all of it. It should be a lesson. One, there's sort of different layers of this. On the one hand, this happens in the Muslim world all the time, with much more frequency than anyone wants to admit, that there are mob acts of violence like this, and particularly when it offends religious Islamic faith, right? People will murder over this, which just, I think it shows you, one, there's, of course, widespread illiteracy and ignorance across the Muslim world. That's just a statement of fact, that the number of individuals in a country like Afghanistan who can actually read, you know, it's estimated, I don't know. I'm going off the top of my head here, so apologies if I'm under or overestimating, but it's something like 20% of the country can read. Maybe it's 30 now. But they will seize upon these things, because also there's a moment, if you don't know anything, if you don't actually understand the foundations and the basis for your conclusions, never mind your belief, you turn to rage the moment that they're challenged because you can't defend them yourself. So you just want people around you to agree with you and to go after the problem. The gratification of mob activity. 888-900-3393. The left is the mob, by the way, if that metaphor wasn't clear enough. I'll be back in just a minute.
This is the Buck Sexton Show.
The Blaze Radio Network. This is the Buck Sexton Show.
A very important note just came in from a listener. He said, you know, misogyny probably played a role in the attack on the woman in Kabul and the beating of her to death and setting of her on fire. Just also understand this is in a crowded place. No one stood up. No one would defend this woman from being beaten to death and then lit on fire. No one says a word. Many join the mob. None oppose it. But the idea of a woman as being worth less than a man is not some aberrant thought in the Islamic faith, as you no doubt already know. And that she was a woman left her, in the eyes of the mob, even less able to defend herself, both physically and otherwise, but also less worthy of defense because she's a woman. This is widespread in the Islamic faith. In fact, there is a piece on the Huffington Post, no less.
I know.
From Ayan Hirsi Ali, who I've talked to you about many times before and who has a new book out and so has now received a lot of attention for her arguments about Islam. What's interesting here is that she makes the case that Democrats, progressives, leftists in America, they will decry discrimination in all forms against all people. Well, I shouldn't even say that, because not against Christians. But that's put that aside for a moment. Not against believing religious Jews, put that aside for a moment. That discrimination they are actually fine with. But when it comes to discrimination against women, they are all united here at home. But discrimination against Muslim women abroad, not an issue for American feminists, not an issue that the Democrats in this country and the left in this country takes up as a cause. And that the growth of Sharia, which inherently debases women and treats them as less than a man as a matter of law, and there can be no debate on this issue, as evidenced by the treatment of women across the Muslim world. As I've said to you, all you have to know really about a society is how it treats women, and you know everything you need to know. And across the Muslim world, women are treated almost without exception as less than men, and in many cases as property, and they are treated terribly. But the left does not get particularly upset about this. No, they make exceptions. They make exceptions. And for Islam, it's a cultural exception. It's multiculturalism. We tolerate their intolerance. Ayan Hirsi Ali says, don't tolerate intolerance. Don't make excuses because you associate this faith with ethnic minorities. Don't make excuses for it. You are condemning women to oppression, and you're not speaking out on their behalf. I also think it's interesting to see, how long do we have to wait until a gay rights activist, for example, brings suit against a Muslim bakery? How long before that happens? I'm still waiting, Team Buck. I'm wondering. See you tomorrow at noon. I'll be here with you, shields high.
Buck Sexton. The Blaze Radio Network.